Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday. And I know some states have started to loosen up restrictions for some of you, but a lot of you are still under stay-home orders, including our buddy Duff McKagan, which is he's still home in Seattle, hanging out with family, and thinking up and calling in the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan here. Hope you're doing good. You know, I'm just in the backyard, safely quarantining. Sue just gave herself a nice pedicure out in the backyard. We're listening to some go-go. She gave me a pedicure as well. But listen, a guy called me and tried to sell me a coffin. I said, that's the last thing I need. Thank you very much.
That was a good one. Duff keeping us laughing during the quarantine. Thank you so much. And I'm pretty sure keeping himself laughing as well during this crisis. And while things are improving around the country, I think it's going to be a while before we can all go to concerts and bars and that sort of thing. And that's why you should come hang out with me tomorrow night for the Saturday night special with special guest Hurricane Helms. We're telling stories, having some drinks, sing-alongs, and of course, I'm answering your questions. Join me on Facebook Live or YouTube Live at 9 p.m. Eastern. Let's have some fun. And if you can't be there live on Saturday night, you can check out the fun the next day on my Facebook page or my YouTube channel. All right, so another thing I've been doing while staying home during the pandemic is rereading some of my favorite books by my favorite author, Stephen King. I got JoJo Feeney here from the Keeping It 100 with Conan podcast. Big Stephen King fan as well. So JoJo and I put together our top 10 Stephen King books. We're going to share our list with you guys, talk about our favorite characters and scenes and chapters and which of our Stephen King books were turned into great movies and miniseries and others which were not so good. We've got stories about The Shining, Carrie, The Stand, It, Pet Sematary, and even the short stories Stephen King wrote that were made into great movies like The Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me. All about Stephen King today on Talk is Jericho, starting now. All right, so now that we're at home here during lockdown, during the pandemic, it's kind of a good time to build things if you're that style of technician, or maybe you're watching movies that you haven't seen. But it's also time and a good time to read books as well. And JoJo Feeney and I, who's from Conan's show Keep It 100 and longtime friend of Jericho, shall we say, have been talking for a while about doing a Stephen King themed podcast. So we thought now is the perfect time for that, as people have a lot of time to read. And we're going to do our top 10 Stephen King books, although that's very hard to choose just 10.
Yeah, it was definitely. And going through his whole catalog and picking my favorite, you know, top 10 or whatever, it made me realize that there's a lot I want to go back and reread, you know. Right. So there's a lot of time to do that now as well.
Well, let's talk about this. So when did you first discover Stephen King, and kind of tell us about your relationship with him and his stories over the years?
I grew up early. By that, I mean, when I was 11, 12 years old, I didn't want to watch, you know, Ninja Turtles or read, you know, R.L. Stein and stuff like that. I jumped right into like watching R-rated movies, and I read adult novels and biographies and stuff like that. It's just the way I grew up is what I was interested in. So I would raid my dad's bookshelf. And the first Stephen King book I grabbed, we'll talk about it on my list, but I remember I grabbed Cujo because the cover, you know, it had the dog on there with the foaming mouth and everything. I was like, oh, this looks cool. And I hadn't seen any of his movies yet or anything like that, so he was kind of a mystery to me. I just picked it based off the cover, and of course, you know, my mind was blown from that first book, you know. And then from there, I read everything that I could through the years. And anytime we took a family trip when I was younger, I would stop at, you know, the bookstore and make sure I had a couple paperback for wherever we were going, and always made sure that it was, you know, I had a Stephen King book with me when I traveled.
Yeah, it's funny because I had kind of a similar, my aunt turned me on to Stephen King, and she was kind of always like my cool aunt that would kind of call the shots for what I was doing, you know, in books and all that sort of thing. And she turned me on to reading Carrie. And it's funny because when I was, I think I was probably 12, maybe 13, she told me to read this book, and that's how I found out what a period was, like a female period, because it starts obviously with Carrie having her period in the shower, and everyone's just, you know, no pun intended, ragging on her and screaming at her, and I had no idea that that's what happened. I was kind of freaked out too.
See, some of them, it's interesting that we'll talk about. Some movies came out afterwards or miniseries. And so for some of these, it's like I saw the movie first, and then some I didn't. And with Carrie, I'd seen the movie first, you know. And so sometimes you get certain pictures in your head of the characters and stuff like that. But that was one of the first movies of his that I did see.
Well, and like I said, too, when I discovered King in 83, that was kind of his golden era, because even when you go through and look, through his bibliography, and we'll discuss this. I mean, he started, Carrie was in 74. Mm-hmm. So like you said, you started at Cujo, which was 81. You've got all these books you can go back and read. So when I discovered Carrie in 82, 83, had all these years to go back and read all the classic books that he wrote. And then also he had so many coming out at that time, Christine, Pet Sematary, Talisman, you know, Eyes of the Dragon, Thinner, It, Misery, it's all in there. The Stand, like it's this kind of golden era of King at that time frame. So like you said, I was a King fanatic and wasn't. I remember I tried to read like Dean Koontz and a couple other ones here and there. But to me, if it wasn't King, I wasn't interested. And I read every single thing he put out, with one notable exception, which we'll talk about.
It's funny you mentioned Dean Koontz, because I went through the same thing where I would be in the bookstore, you know, in the airport or train station gift shop looking for something to grab for a trip or whatever. And, you know, you give these other guys a chance, but they're just, it's just the same. Once you're a Stephen King fan, like that's, you're used to his voice, used to his style. That's what you know. That's what you want to read. And although some of the books I've read from Koontz were good, nothing has hung on through the years like a lot of these novels have.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, too, you know, like you mentioned, there's all the movies and there's been so many King movies. And so many bad ones to mention. What are your, before we get into the top 10 books, what are your top three, top five, whatever, favorite King movies?
The Shining, of course, the first one with Jack Nicholson, not the miniseries, although that was pretty good too. Pet Sematary, Carrie, I'm going to give The Stand miniseries. I'm going to throw that up there.
Oh, wow.
And the first, when they just came out with the two It chapter one and chapter two. I really like chapter one, was kind of let down by chapter two, but I'll still put chapter one up there.
Yeah, they did a good job with it. I find they should do that with The Stand as well. You need to break that up into a couple movies. And like you said, they did that in the early 90s. They did a Stand miniseries. They did an It miniseries. But the fact that it was on actual network television made it a little bit lame. But I really liked Misery. I think it was probably the best Stephen King movie. Green Mile was great. Shawshank Redemption, Stand By Me. I thought The Mist was awesome, although I hated the ending of it. I thought they did a good job with everything else, because that's a hard movie to make. You know, so there's all those ones which are much better than the, you know, the Lawnmower Man of the world.
And Sleep Sleepwalkers.
Which one?
Remember Sleepwalkers?
Yeah, exactly. Or something like The Running Man, where they just butchered the story completely.
Right.
But let's get into this, man. Top 10 Stephen King books, and I've got a couple honorable mentions. Do you have some honorable mentions, or did you just stick with a straight 10?
Yeah, I went with kind of when you told me that you had your list and you had some extras for honorable mentions. I was like, well, there's certain ones that I can't cut, so I'll throw them in the honorable mentions. So yeah, I do have a few.
Well, let's start with your honorable mentions.
Well, the first one I picked was little known because they don't publish it anymore. And he wrote it as Richard Bachman back in the day, and it was his first book as Bachman. And it was called Rage.
Hmm.
The reason it's not around anymore is because it was basically about a high school
right.
shooter.
Right.
You know? So I believe in the late 90s, he took it out of print and even took it out of this. There was a collection called the Bachman Books
yeah.
that he wrote under a pseudonym, and Rage was one of them, along with Running Man and whatever. But I recognized reading it as a teenager how dangerous it could be, you know, and it turned out that some kids did take it the wrong way and use it as a bad influence on, you know, some of these school shooters. They found the book in their locker or whatever, you know. So
really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, one of the lesser known ones. It's not like Columbine or anything like that. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, he had the book in his locker. So that was the impetus for King to try to, you know, get that stopped from being published.
Interesting because I also have the Bachman books as one of my honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Rage and Roadwork were okay, but to me, because the Bachman books, Stephen King wrote a bunch of books early in his career under the pseudonym Richard Bachman, as you mentioned, and they put together a collection of them. So it's basically four novellas. But I think The Long Walk and Running Man, and if you haven't read The Running Man, don't think it's the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura. That's about 10% of what the book is. The book is so well done. It's basically the whole country's chasing after him. As it's a game show where you basically stay on the run as long as you can and everyone's looking for you. And then also The Long Walk, which is another kind of post-apocalyptic game show where guys walk as long as they can. And if you stop walking a certain speed, they shoot you. And whoever lasts the longest wins. And I think to this day, both of those stories are two of my favorite stories that King's ever written.
It's funny because as talented as he is, and you know, some of these guys, they're either really great novelists and maybe the short stories aren't up to par, or vice versa. Someone can write a really good short story and then the novels can drag or whatever. But with King, even his really epic books like It or The Stand that we'll talk about later, of course, are as good as or on par with some of these short story collections, like, you know, the Bachman books and Four Past Midnight and stuff, which was another one of my honorable mentions. Four Past Midnight had the Langoliers in it, which was another miniseries in the 90s, which is the miniseries was kind of funny to look back. Not the greatest, but it's definitely unique. So I put Four Past Midnight on there as well.
It's like you said, with all of these forums and platforms looking for content, if I was a producer, I would look through all of King's stuff and redo, you know, or remake or whatever you could, because it's all so well done. Like you mentioned, I forgot about Four Past Midnight. I'm just scrolling through now, like The Sun Dog.
Yeah.
Is a killer story as well. So I'll move on to my next honorable mention. And once again, all these are honorable mentions because I just couldn't fit them into 10 slots. But I'm going to go with Christine. Another, I think it might have been the second Stephen King book that I read because I loved Carrie so much. And I think I went and got it, maybe Firestarter, Dead Zone, but Christine was the next one that I really, really equated to. And I showed my daughters the movie about a year ago, and the movie doesn't hold up. The movie's kind of a stinker. But the book's still great.
Yeah. I also included The Dead Zone and Cujo both on this honorable list. And like I said, Cujo was the first one I read. Dead Zone was the second. My dad had them both. You know, I just stole them from the bookshelf. And it's tough, like you said, to make a top 10. They're both really good. Having them on the honorable mention isn't a bad reflection on them at all. And actually, those are the two that I saw on my list, and I was like, I got to go back and reread these as an adult, you know, because I read them when I was a teenager.
Well, the thing is, too, The Dead Zone, it's such a cool story because it's basically the tale. It's a lot like The Stand. It's the tale of two cities, so to speak. It's not just the fact that Johnny's got these powers to see the future, but it's also the fact that the guy running for president is – it's basically crazy and wants to end the world, from what I recall. And so there's two separate stories that kind of combine and meet head on.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he kind of makes the, you know, attempt at, you know, spoiler alert, the attempt at assassin is the hero of the book.
Right.
You know, so I thought that was a cool perspective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. A great perspective there. My other, I have two more honorable mentions. One of them is It. And the only reason why I put It on there is because it's been so discussed, recently with the movies, and everybody knows about it. So obviously that's a King classic that everyone should read. But I just felt to be in the top 10, I'll put something else in there that maybe people haven't read.
Right, right. Yeah, I that'll be on my list. And I just with the film, I thought it was interesting to see how they were going to approach a certain scene that we could discuss, which sure. was, man, reading that as a teenager, it didn't really hit me until I got older how it's just very awkward. And that the scene basically is the main girl goes, you know, they're trapped underground and she winds up having sex with all the male characters. But it's treated in like this touching, tender way. But you look back at it, you're like, man, that is an awkward scene
right.
and read, you know?
Did they put that in the movie, in the new one?
No, they just escaped.
I forgot about that. And she does that to make them all men or something? What's the reason for that? I can't remember.
Yeah, it's like so they all – it's like to make a connection between all of them. And then once right. they have connection, they can overpower, you know, Pennywise's powers and find their way out from under the sewers or whatever. It was – even explaining it sounds kind of odd, right? But in the story, like, I swear, it does fit.
What a great detail, too. That's something my aunt, she was the dean of education at the University of Manitoba, very smart lady, genius lady, and she always really kind of approved and encouraged my reading. And every year on my birthday, we would go to the bookstore and to a record store, and she'd buy me whatever I wanted. There was no limit. And I bought, you know, I would buy 5 or 6 books there, but she said, what is it about Stephen King that you like so much? And she said, I don't want to hear because it's scary. Like, I want you to really think about it. And I said, it's his attention to detail. He's such a great detailed writer. Even if he's describing, you know, I'm looking out my window, describing a tree or bushes or coming up with these little details. Like, fuck, how can they beat Pennywise? Well, if they have the ultimate connection of having sex with each other, like that's such a King thing to do.
Yeah.
Because he covers all the bases. There's never any plot holes in a Stephen King book.
No, and even his, you mentioned his attention to detail. It's like, I feel like, even though I've never been to the state of Maine, but I feel like I know exactly what it looks like because right. his stories are based, whether it was Derry or Castle Rock or even in Bangor or whatever. But just the way he would describe the state, I feel like I've seen it, you know?
You know, it's funny because we did have a show a couple years ago in Bangor. And it's the first time I'd been there. And like you said, it's like it's Stephen King all across the board. And I went to his house with the big bat gates and all that sort of stuff yeah. and kind of sat in front of it. And, you know, it's just one of those things. Like you said, you can see these characters. And like I know what a Maine accent sounds like, even yes. though I don't really know just from what I've read in King books.
Right, right. Exactly.
You know? My last honorable mention is the most recent one that I read, which is Outsider. And the only reason I didn't put it in my top 10 is I have three other kind of late era King on there. So I didn't want to put too many. But Outsider was just amazing, too. It's an excellent book. I'm not sure if you've read that one or not. I know that you said you were trying to read it before we did this.
Yeah, I haven't yet. But I know when I first saw like description of it, I think I saw it in a bookstore and read, you know, the tab. And I was like, man, that sounds like classic King. Like,
yes.
you know, a form or whatever, if you will. And I have it. I just haven't read it yet because I'm waffling between like, do I want to read it and then watch the
yeah.
show? I want to watch the show, you know, so, but it's here, it's waiting. I haven't gotten to it yet.
I always want to read it first. And it's funny because I really, really liked the book and the show. I didn't like some of the casting. So I only lasted a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was too fresh because I literally just read the book and then went to watch the series right after. So maybe I'll give it another try, you know, 6 months down the line or so. But yeah, like you said, classic King, amazing mystery, great plot twists, great character development. And you know, he has enjoyed a late career resurgence. And we'll yeah. discuss this because there was a time for almost 20 years where he wrote a lot of just mediocre, more normal books than yeah. outright horror or supernatural or whatever. A lot of relationship stuff and, you know, Gerald's Game and Bag of Bones and Hearts in Atlantis and those type of show of books. But anyways, let's go. I don't know if are we going to do this chronologically? Are you going 10 to 1 or how did you do your list?
I went 10 to 1.
Okay.
So
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Unless you start with 10, and then I went chronologically, so I'll start from the beginning and you start from your 10 and we'll work our way down there. So what's your number 10 on the list?
So I started with On Writing, which is his it's actually a nonfiction book. And, it's about the process of writing and how he writes characters, how he started writing, his childhood. And then it has the second part of the book is actually after his... after he was hit by the van. If you remember, he was in a very serious accident where a van hit him as he was walking down the road, and he had broken leg and ribs and a hip, and it took him a while to recover. And the book kind of describes the accident, the aftermath, and worrying about how this was going to affect writing. If, oh man, can I write about the accident? Is this going to take over, everything I'm thinking about writing and everything? And for me, as someone who wants to be a writer and writes on occasion and has ideas and tries to form them and things like that, it's a book I find myself picking up a lot because I find it inspiring every time I read it. I learn something new, or it'll push me to write more and stuff like that. So anyone who's, a creative-minded person, whether they want to write stories or scripts, whatever, I would recommend reading On Writing for sure.
Interesting. I've never read that before. That's probably the one thing of his that I haven't read. There might be a couple other ones. There's one thing, it was called like Danse Macabre or something like that I haven't read. But interesting. So it's On Writing. He wrote it like years ago and then kind of did an abridged version after his accident, or did he write the whole book after his accident?
Yeah, the first part he started, it was kind of like he started writing and he put in a drawer, worked on some other things, and then the accident happened, and that's when he came back to it. And the last third of the book, I would say, is post-accident, him describing everything that he went through and how badly he was injured and all that stuff, and how much he had trouble writing afterwards. So
I'll check that one out. Because, like I said, his nonfiction stuff is very good as well. For me, starting right near the beginning, Salem's Lot is on there. Is one of my 10. There was a miniseries of this from the 70s. I remember David Soul was in it, and they did a good job with it. But it's a great book. It's actually fairly short for a King book as well. I believe it's only 250, 300 pages, but it's really well done. And it's about vampires, obviously, if you haven't seen the book or seen the movie. But it's, like I said, it's one of those ones. I remember there's a great scene in there where one of the babies, a kid's baby. Actually, it's a longer book. It's over 400 pages, my mistake. But for King, that's fairly short. But I remember there's a scene where one of the babies, a lady's baby dies because she's been infected to be a vampire or something along those lines. And she's trying to feed it baby food. I remember... is King describing that the baby food just like fell out of its mouth, like with a plop. And just the fact that I can remember that line after reading this, some 40 odd years ago, once again, tells you how great of a writer he is.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll go through both of our lists. We'll probably hit a few of these. One thing I learned about him early on was, no character was safe.
Right.
If it was a little kid or even an infant or, a teenage character that you're really grown fond of, no one is safe in his book. So,
well, and like you said, I mean, even in The Outsider, I mean, all of these, I'm not even going to say plot spoiler or whatever, but the guy that you're pulling for dies in the first 100 pages and you're like, well, who am I going to pull for now?
Yeah.
And then the whole other story unfolds. So you're definitely right. Nobody's safe in a King book, especially kids. King writes a lot of great kids' stories about kids, but he's also not afraid to kill them too, and in very brutal ways.
Right.
Okay, what's number 9?
So, just real quick, there's a part of me with pop culture and stuff where I got stuck in like the early 2000s. I mean, movies, music, and books and stuff. So, I kind of fell off with King for a little while, right? So, in the mid 2000s, I kind of stopped reading his stuff. There's a couple that just turned me off, but this is a recent one. It's just the last few years, actually. It's called Mr. Mercedes. Like the last 10 years. And it's the beginning of a trilogy. I just found that out. I was like, oh, man, I got two more books in this series to check out. But it was It's about a retired detective. He's kind of getting screwed with by a notorious killer in his town who got away with an incident where he drove a car into a crowd and calls himself Mr. Mercedes and, you know, sends him letters teasing him and all this. And it's, you know, about that, hunting the guy down, trying to find him. There's a side romance storyline, which King does that a little bit with the older guy going for, you know, a new chick in his life or whatever. And
is that what's the name of the main character? Bill something?
Yeah, Bill Hodges.
Yeah, yeah. He has a series of Bill Hodges books.
Yeah, I didn't notice, but I have the second one on my Kindle, and I'm like, all right, we'll get to that next, you know. But yeah, it was a pleasant surprise because, like I said, I had fallen off a little bit in the mid-2000s. So to see him, and I used the term return to form earlier, that's what it was for me with this Mr. Mercedes. Like, oh, yeah, he still got it. Like, good.
Like, yeah, you know, like I said, he really has enjoyed a major career resurgence over the last 10, 15 years for sure. So let's move on to your number nine. Is that it, Mr. Mercedes?
Yeah. Yeah, that was nine.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm a big fan of King's short stories, and that's another thing that he's done is he has released, gosh, probably half a dozen now, if not more, short story collections. This guy's always writing, and whether he's writing, you know, 1,200 page books like Under the Dome, or whether he's writing, you know, 4 or 5 page stories, there's so many great ones. And Night Shift to me is another early King book that I discovered, and there's so many classic stories in that. There's Graveyard Shift, which is about giant rats in a mine shaft, which they made a movie of. There's The Mangler, which is about a crazy, like, a possessed dry cleaning machine. Gray Matter, Battleground Trucks, Sometimes They Come Back, which they made a movie of. The Lawnmower Man, which they did. And, of course, Children of the Corn. This one is one that if you guys are looking for some great short stories for King, this is definitely one of them.
You know, they made a movie of The Mangler too.
They did. That's right.
95. I looked it up real quick, but
yeah,
I just remember Graveyard Shift specifically from that collection. Like, you know, and he writes, people call it the horror genre. He is a horror writer, but he can write the horror stories and a whole bunch of different stuff. But Graveyard Shift is terrifying, man. Especially if you have a fear of rats, rodents, whatever.
Hold. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And Trucks was actually made into Maximum Overdrive.
Right, yeah.
But you mentioned, too, he does the horror stuff better than anybody. There's also a great story in this called The Ledge about this guy's little sister who becomes a stripper, and basically she jumps off a ledge and commits suicide. And just his whole story about how he loses her and, you know, how she distances herself from his family. It's just a really well-done story about a family. And King's so great at that as well.
Yeah, he is. He really is.
Number eight?
Hearts in Atlantis. Wow. I don't, like, the one that they turned into the movie wasn't called Hearts in Atlantis in the book. It was called the Men in Low Coats or something like that. Yeah. And the Hearts in Atlantis story in the book was totally different. It was about a college student during the Vietnam War era. He turns a little hippie-ish, meets a girl. And that, to me, that's why I picked it, because I find myself going back to that story a lot. It's got a lot of memorable characters. It's a little bit different because although some of the stories in that collection have the supernatural element, this kind of didn't. And it had characters from other stories in it, the Hearts in Atlantis story in the Hearts in Atlantis collection. And overall, I just thought that it was one of his better collections because all the stories wound up tied together.
It's interesting, yeah, because that's another kind of a few short stories and a few novellas. And I remember reading that once, but I never revisited it. Maybe I'll have to check that out again. Are they all connected or are they all separate?
They're all connected, and there's kind of a vague connection to the Dark Tower and some of the villains from the Dark Tower, which, you know, that shows up a lot throughout
always,
the book.
Yeah.
People don't realize that they're reading about a villain from another book. You are, you know, but it was just I liked it because it was about a kid in college, you know, him and his buddies get addicted to playing hearts and meets a girl and stuff. It's just one of those stories and just really well written.
I'll go to number three for me, which is The Stand, which I'm currently rereading now, the you know, the longer version, the extended version. Yep. And I'll tell you what, man, it's crazy how much in common the beginning of The Stand has with what's going on right now with this global pandemic. And it also makes me realize how lucky we are that this coronavirus didn't kill, you know, 99% of the population like Captain Trips did, because it starts the same way. Everyone's denying it. No one can believe it. Blind panic. And then everyone's gone. Everyone's dead. But then the real story starts with, of course, good versus evil. And Randall Flagg, the walking dude, who appears in many King books, always as the evil guy. and always has the initials RF as well.
Mm-hmm. One thing about King that I'm sure we could get into is the fact that he's a huge music fan, rock music from the 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever, and he'll always put lyrics in there, either in the story or as a preamble to the chapter. And one thing I remember from the Stand Extended version, being a huge Doors fan, is that he randomly has Stu Redman run into Jim Morrison. Like, and in the story, Morrison has faked his death. He pulls up to Stu's gas station. And Stu's kind of, you kind of look familiar, man. And then he like figures it out. Or whatever. I thought that was a cool little side story, you know?
Very much so. And I also, too, I remember Christine, there's one of the lyrics that he used was, "There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad."
Right.
And whenever I hear that song and hear that line, I always think of Christine. So, but The Stand, I mean, it's so good. And there's so many great characters, like you said, Stu Redman, and then Nick Ambrose, who's mute and deaf. And then you've got the Trash Can Man, you got the Kid, and Randall Flagg, and Harold Lauder. It's so well done, because it's not the pandemic part that's the meat of the story. It's almost like Full Metal Jacket, the movie. There's two distinct, amazing stories that are connected just because they're basically in the same book.
Yeah, yeah. And it's that's one of his big, big epics. So if you haven't checked it out and you're going to, you know, get ready to invest some time in it.
Yeah, exactly. Take some time, because it is, like you said, especially the expanded version of being about 1,200 pages or so. But it's worth it. None of it is dead weight, shall we say.
Right.
All right, number seven. Number seven? Number seven.
I'm going to go Pet Sematary.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. And as we mentioned earlier, he's not afraid to knock off a child character, which is what really sends a story spinning, is, you know, one of the main characters. Kid gets hit by a truck, and I'm sure people have seen either the original or the remake or whatever, so that's not a huge spoiler or anything, but just the way the main character, Lewis, reacts, and as the reader, you're going, nah, man, no, don't do that. Yeah. You know it's going to work out, you know, and he's just so...
Exactly. I didn't like the twist in the new version of the movie where they killed the daughter instead of the son. You know, it works so much better with Gage, you know, and I remember reading it, like he feels his fingertips on the back of the kid's shirt, but he just can't grab it. He's that close, and that's what sends him over the edge to want to bury his son in the Pet Sematary. And of course, his son comes back not the same way as he was when he was alive, shall we say.
That kid was great in the original, the little blonde kid that played him. But
absolutely.
Like, I'm not a huge stickler when it comes to, you know, movie versions of books, although I can be. And in that case, when I saw that they did the daughter was the one that got killed, it kind of turned me off. Like, what'd you do that for? There's no reason to change that, you know?
That was just to give you 2 seconds to people like us that have seen it and know the story of going, oh, that's interesting. Oh, wow, she gets it. And then you realize that throws the whole dynamic off, because it was the baby dying that makes it so much worse than a daughter who can talk and speak. Yeah. You know, the kid couldn't speak. That made him even creepier when he came back. And then one of the worst, grossest scenes ever were in the book and in the movie, where he slices the judge's Achilles tendon with a scalpel. Gross.
And don't forget the sister Zelda, which I think was, you know, many people had nightmares from her in the bed with the twisted back and everything. And I don't know how well they did it in the remake, but in the original, even from the 80s, it was a terrifying scene.
Yeah, absolutely. It was. My next one is Different Seasons, which is a collection of four novellas, but all four of them are excellent, excellent, excellent. And three of them have been made into movies. Two of them classic, and one of them okay, but I mentioned earlier, Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, unbelievable. And the best part about Different Seasons is every story is connected to a season. Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption is Hope Springs Eternal. Apt Pupil, which is Summer of Corruption. That's a great book, man. That's awesome. It's about a kid who finds he hangs out with an old man and then realizes that the old man is a Nazi war criminal and slowly drives him to start doing these war crimes again.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you got The Body, which is Fall from Innocence, and that became Stand By Me, one of the best movies, not just in King's collection, but one of the best movies of all time, I'd say. And then you've got the one that has never been made, The Breathing Method, which is A Winter's Tale, which is also a great story, which is about a storyteller's club. And their motto is, it's not the story, it's he who tells it. And I love that. I love that line.
Yeah, with The Body, that of course became Stand By Me, as you mentioned. I remember seeing the movie when I was younger, of course, and then reading the short story. And like I said, as a younger kid, I kind of leaned more towards, you know, adult movies, mature reading, whatever. So for me, it was cool to see a kid's story where the kids were talking like the kids I knew and smoking and all this, you know.
Yeah, right.
That's how kids around that age, you know, would act. You know, you're all trying to curse around each other. You're trying a cigarette, whatever. And it just was very realistic to me, the way those characters were written and you know, even portrayed in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Very well done. I showed that movie to my son when he was about 12 or 13 with his friend, and they loved it for that reason. The story and the movie is ageless. And it's funny, when I was in college, I was in journalism, and creative writing was one of the side classes, one of the minors or whatever. And you had to write a book for one of your final year tests or scores. And I did 4 short stories, and I called it Elements, based completely on different seasons. And every story had something to do with fire, earth, water, air, and what's the other one? Earth, maybe? Whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, right.
So each one of them was based on that. It's totally stolen from different seasons.
It was a great idea, though.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was good. It was good. I should try and find it. All right, number 6.
Misery.
Nice.
Something that I did see the movie first, but the book is so much more violent, unbelievably more violent. I don't think people realize that.
Yes.
There was certain things that they didn't want to do on the screen, where she hobbles Paul Sheldon in the movie with a sledgehammer, which is brutal enough. But in the book, she actually hacks off his foot.
Yeah.
Oh, and I remember reading, I think he mentioned it in On Writing, actually, where he talked a little bit about his books that became movies, that he just couldn't convince them to keep that in, and it really pissed him off at one point. Like, no, you have to keep in that scene. And they convinced him that this hobbling idea that actually did come from how they would treat thieves back in the day and you know, the mines, like, this would make sense. We could use it. We can't have her hacking his foot off. We just can't, you know what I mean? So, but it was Annie Wilkes, even before the movie, in the book, is one of the most memorable characters he's ever written.
She is such an amazing psycho, and she's basically one of those super fans that just goes the extra mile and obviously just becomes obsessed. And then she tells him how to write a book and what she wants in the book, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember she's so weird, and she's super like proper and all these sort of things, and she refuses to swear. But I think either in Misery or Carrie, she calls breasts dirty pillows. And I always like that, dirty pillows.
Yeah. One thing about King is, and like I said, from reading On Writing and a different biography about him, you know, he had his issues in the 70s and 80s with, you know, drinking and drugs or whatever. And he actually said that when he wrote Cujo, he has no memory of it because he was just blitzed.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
So he was a bad drinker?
Drinker, pills, coke. Like he was in it. So, but with Misery, he said that Annie to him kind of represented him trying to beat his addictions. Like that's in his mind, that's how he was writing it. You know, Paul Sheldon's fighting Annie, but in his mind, he's fighting his addictions at the time. You know, and one thing I was trying to find a few little, you know, notes here and there that you might not have been aware of. The Misery was originally supposed to be a Richard Bachman book.
Oh wow.
Yeah, but he had been outed just prior to its release, so it wound up becoming a Stephen King book.
And what was the difference between a King book and a Bachman book?
Well, he used the pseudonym Richard Bachman to, I guess, kind of write different styles and also to test, like, hey, can I also, maybe I'm just selling books because I'm Stephen King now. Let's see if I can sell them under another, was his idea. So anything that was kind of less or a different style, maybe not as much supernatural horror in it, he would put on the Bachman side of things. But I believe it was like a local journalist in Maine found it out and called him, and he's just admitted it, you know.
That was it, yeah. I remember she was calling him a doobie or a don't be or something along those lines. That was another one of her proper terms, but
yeah.
So my next one is Pet Sematary as well, going chronologically, and we discussed that. And one more thing that I wanted to add about that is I love, there's a character there called I think it might be Victor something or other, who's a guy that the doctor, what's the main character in Pet Sematary? Do you remember his name?
Creed.
Lewis Creed, right. And he tries to save this kid's life because he's a doctor, and the kid's had a car crash and half of his head is caved in. And that guy comes back throughout the story to throughout the novel to kind of warn him about the things he's doing. And I just love that character too. Got very much kind of like an American Werewolf in London, where the guy comes back and he's still got the smashed in head, but trying to, you know, warn him of all these different things that he's doing.
Yeah. Pascal.
Pascal. That's And the baby calls him Paxcow, or the little girl calls him Paxcow. Yeah. What's next for you?
Five. I got Bag of Bones up there. I even in my notes here put,
wow.
I'm not sure. I don't see this on too many top 10 King lists.
No.
I don't know if people didn't like it as much as I did, or if it's kind of forgotten or whatever it is. But it's another one that I pick up and find myself rereading a lot. And it's one of his good ones. I really think it is. It's got a great main bad guy, the Max DeVore, the evil, you know, multi-billionaire villain trying to go after the young lady character that this guy, the main character, is kind of being protective over. And there's a pretty interesting supernatural story behind it too, about the haunted house that he's staying in, and it's tied up in with his writer's block. It's really good. It's long, and it's just everything's really well developed. And like I said, I don't think it's mentioned that much, especially why I included it up there, just to kind of throw it out there. Like, hey, if you haven't read it, give it a shot.
And once again, I'm glad that you chose some of those books, because that was kind of the proverbial dead zone time frame for me with King. That was when I felt that he was just writing more psychological thrillers, and I read them all, but they never grabbed me the way that these earlier books did. And the next one on my list I said The Stand is my favorite. This one may be my favorite as well, depending what day it is. And that's The Talisman, the book that he wrote with Peter Straub.
Yeah.
They need to make a movie about this. I don't know how you could do it, though. It's so long, it's so involved, and it's so great. It involves a kid who basically can flip back and forth to a medieval world and then the real world, but he has to go back to the medieval world where he's meant to be king to save that world, which in turn saves our world. And he meets a werewolf and a demon and giant slugs, and there's radioactive monsters, and there's a crooked preacher who's really Satan, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, I remember reading the paperback when I was younger, and then I actually have a hardcover somewhere of the other one that they wrote together. What was it Black Star?
Black House.
Black House, yeah. So that's on the list as well of things that I haven't read yet. But Talisman was great, yeah.
I didn't appreciate Dark House as much. As a matter of fact, I forgot about it because it's kind of an ipso facto sequel to Talisman. I just didn't find that it worked very well. But also a lot of Dark Tower crossover stuff. But they really, really need to make a movie about this. And it says they've been planning one for decades, and it's been in development hell for the last, you know, 10 years or so. So, but really well done, and it's very long. And I always wonder how they wrote that. I mean, did one guy write one part and then the next guy write the next chapter? Or, I'd be curious. Did he ever mention that on writing when you read it?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But you have to imagine either I do a chapter, you do a chapter, or else someone writes the framework, or, you know, kind of like working in a writer's room on a drama or something like that.
Right. Exactly. Very, very well done. Like I said, definitely, once again, it's 1,000 pages, so it's a long read, but worth checking out. I might actually go back and read it after I finish The Stand.
Yeah, this is, like I said, inspiring me to reread and go back and check out a bunch of the stuff that I haven't read in years, or read some of the ones that I haven't read yet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
The Shining.
Nice.
The Shining is, for some reason, and he's written scarier characters, scarier scenes. To me, The Shining overall is the scariest book I've ever written.
Wow.
And why is that? I don't know. It's just the mood about it, the feeling, the creepiness, and this is without taking the movie into account. I just think there's a mood about that novel that, like, you know, if you're reading it in a dimly lit room, you're going to be looking over your shoulder. You know, like, it just has that feeling about it. And of course, the original movie with Nicholson, you know, you can't walk around to like a very quiet, abandoned looking hotel late at night without being freaked out, especially if there's like a certain pattern of carpet down the hallway or something. You know, it's just The Shining really made hotels, you know, it could be a terrifying experience.
You know, it's interesting, too, because like you mentioned, there was a big feud between King and Stanley Kubrick, who made The Shining, because he kind of took it in a different direction, and King didn't like the adaptation of it. So that's why they did the miniseries, which is more just exactly like the book. But I'll tell you what, that movie holds up. I just watched it with my daughters. They're getting into horror movies, and we watched it probably about a month ago. And it's slow, but when it hits hard, and it's really well done. Of course, you can't think of The Shining without thinking of Jack Nicholson and, you know, Here's Johnny and all that stuff. But it's another such a well-written book about the guy who basically gets taken over by the ghosts that live inside the haunted hotel and cause him to go crazy, just like the previous caretaker went crazy and killed his family. And that's what they want him to do as well.
And you can see how that, like, the character of Jack Torrance was kind of informed by his own struggles with alcoholism, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And that's probably right around the time when King was in the midst of his.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next for me is another short story collection that I love, and actually came out when I was buying these books. So, you know, you'd be, oh, the new Stephen King is out, I'm going to buy it. And it's called Skeleton Crew. Once again, so many great stories in here. It opens up with one of my favorite King stories of all time, The Mist, which, like I said, the movie's great. The ending sucks. The ending in the book is so much better. And Hollywood just insists on having, you know, everything wrapped up at the end, whereas the Mist ends the same way that The Thing does. You know, let's just sit here for a while and see what happens. And there's really no ending to it. You just don't know. And The Mist is basically about a mist that comes and it's filled with horrific creatures like from another dimension. And there's a group of people stuck inside of a grocery store. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't read The Mist, you need to go read it right now. It's so, so good. But there's also The Monkey, Mrs. Todd Shortcut, The Jaunt, The Wedding Gig, The Raft, which they made a movie of in Creepshow 2, Word Processor of the Gods, Beach World, Survivor Type, which is great about a gangster who gets stranded on a desert island and ends up having to eat his own hands. He has to cannibalize himself because there's nothing left to eat. Grandma, but it's really, really good. Very, very classic King for the majority of the book.
Yeah, is the movie the one that has Thomas Jane, right?
Yes, The Mist, yeah.
Am I confusing The Mist with The Fog, or you know what I mean? But
no, that's
so,
the one, yeah.
So the movie ending is different than the book. So the movie ending where they escape, but they, like, I forget how it goes.
It's so stupid because it ends because they're getting attacked by, you know, a giant monster, and he made a deal that he would shoot everybody in the car before they would get eaten by these evil creatures. And he shoots everyone in the car, including his own son. And right when he does that, the mist clears and the military comes and saves the day. It's like the dumbest ending ever. It's so depressing, and I hated it. And I can't believe the movie tested well enough to allow that ending to stay.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah. But once again, lots of movies from that. And actually not as many as I think as Night Shift had, but still worth reading that book for sure.
Mm-hmm. I went with Different Seasons next. So nice. You had already mentioned it, but I mean, again, if you, Shawshank Redemption, Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption, as it's called in there, is endlessly readable, just like the movie is endlessly watchable. Apt Pupil, I found almost as like disturbing as Rage, because it's kind of similar, disturbed high school character, you know, he winds up, you know, hanging out with the escape Nazi, as you mentioned. And then towards the end, he just basically takes a rifle up to the top of a bridge and starts picking people off. And I'm like, man, this book as well.
Yeah.
A little dangerous in the wrong hands, you know. But
that's a great point. And this is after he tortured this Nazi with threatening to turn him in and gets him to start killing cats. And then he starts killing dogs. Right. And then he starts killing bums. And then he basically... He makes him dress up in his Nazi outfit and do Heil Hitler, and it's really disturbed. And that's why the movie did not come across as well, because it's a disturbing story all across the board.
Yeah, it's one of his darkest ones, and I mean that's covering a lot of ground.
And I'll say this too, it's funny because Anthrax, you could tell, obviously, were King fans because they wrote a song called Skeleton in the Closet, which was based on that pupil. They wrote Among the Living, which was based on The Stand. And they wrote another song from State of Euphoria record called Misery Loves Company about misery. So lots of King influences there. And I wrote a song called Stranded for my high school band Scimitar, which was based on Survivor Type. So always ripping off the greats, JoJo.
Of course.
What do you got next?
It.
Okay.
You know, another one it's very long. It's an epic. It has that crazy scene that we mentioned earlier, but it's endlessly rereadable, like I said. And every one of the characters, one of the notes I made here is that every one of the good guy characters is like relatable. There's never a boring chapter like, oh no, it's the Mike librarian chapter. Let's skip. Everyone's chapter is good. Ben becomes an architect and Bill becomes a famous author and Richie becomes a comedian. And you know, it's just, it's really, really good. And one thing that I like to do with it is to try to read it sequentially, which it's not written that way at all. But when you read the kids' chapters first and then the little interludes and then the adult chapters, it kind of, you know, shows it to you in a whole new way. And it's a little difficult to flip back and forth and all that, but I've done it a few times. And to me, he's got a few of them, but that's one of his masterpieces for sure.
One of the greatest characters, too, Pennywise, when you're talking whether it's Skarsgård or whether, the classic Tim Curry. But in the book, he's basically an entity that can turn into your biggest fear. And that goes from, you know, werewolves and Frankensteins and evil people and giant spiders. And King has a real affiliation with spiders, and I don't like spiders either. So that always freaks me out, too. And he really described that spider, really grossed me out. And there's spiders all over the Mist as well, which have acid webs. And it's just, he has a lot of that sort of stuff. And it's funny, too, because there's a scene that's borderline cheesy in It too, when they're in the Chinese restaurant, all the fortune cookies start turning into little creatures.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the way that he wrote it. I went back and read it afterwards, and all those little creatures are in the book. So if you think that's a little bit cheesy, they're just doing exactly what King had written in those books.
Another thing that they couldn't touch as far as adapting it for the screen, we've talked about some of the darker characters that he's written. There's a character in It called Patrick Hostetter. And there's a chapter set aside for this character. And if you remember, he was one of Henry Bauer's friends. And they described him in the book, like he's a sociopath. He has no feelings, this and that. There's actually a scene where he smothers his 2-year-old brother to death. And it's difficult, difficult chapter to read. But one of the darkest characters in a whole collection of them. But Patrick Hostetter, I mean, you ask any Stephen King, you know, aficionado, they'll remember Patrick Hostetter, because
they couldn't really touch him. You're right, because
he showed up and he was on like a missing child poster. People went, "Oh man, they're going to use Hostetter," but that was it. They couldn't use him for anything else, you know. At least not the way the book.
Yeah, like you said, there's some certain characters that, like you said, Patrick Hostetter. But once, like I love, I mentioned him earlier, but the kid from The Stand, like just one of the best, just psycho lunatic characters. We mentioned Trash Can Man, Patrick Hostetter, the villain from The Body. What's his name? Kiefer Sutherland played him. Ace Merrill. Ace Merrill. Yeah, like just, you know, it's just like Buddy Repperton and Christine, like just these fucking assholes that aren't just high school bullies. They're high school bullies if they were maniacs and psychotic that these kids have to deal with.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, I think I might have missed around there, but
yeah. You got two.
So King comes once again, going chronologically, because I had It on my list as well. And if you look at King, that It was written in and released in 86. Then he had some good ones after that. And then that's when he went into kind of that wasteland for me, which started with, you know, kind of the dark half Needful Things. You know, like I was talking about Gerald's Game, Dolores Claiborne, Insomnia, Rose Matter. I mean, those are all just relationship stories or like domestic abuse. And, you know, I just did not like any of them, Regulators and Dreamcatcher and all that sort of stuff. But he made a little bit of a comeback with Cell. Then to me, where he really struck gold again was in 2009 with Under the Dome.
Which
is another one of his super long books, which is over 1,000 pages. But what I love about it is it's a lot like The Stand in that what would happen if suddenly the outskirts of your town were basically covered with a dome?
Yeah.
And another King thing is he doesn't explain things sometimes. He just says sometimes bad things happen to good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. And right. He doesn't really explain why the dome is there, but people have to deal with it. And then what happens when the society and the town starts to go nuts? And then you almost have another stand situation with, you know, the good side and the evil side on both sides of town until they finally have this giant war. But it's really well done. And that's where I was like, the king is back. You know what I mean? It's like if you're a big Kiss fan and they do, you know, Rock and Roll Over, and then they go to the disco, and then they go all these pop things, and then finally Creatures of the Night comes out. You're like, they're back. They did it. And that's what I felt like for Under the Dome.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, it was another return to form and another one of his big epics. And it, you know, touches on the issues that you mentioned. And I think it's funny that as King readers, you know, my wife has said, like, you know, you read too much. You watch too many movies, because as soon as this coronavirus thing started, I was doing the shopping. It's like, man, it's all going to hit the fan. This is it. And she's like, you read too much, man. You watch too many movies. You read too much of The Stand and this and that. So
you got to prepare, though. And that's,
yeah,
that's like I said, that. And, you know, I remember carrying that book around. I was working for the WWE and just having this giant book in my hand. And that's, you know, you can read it on Kindle now. And a lot of times I do, because a lot of times I'll say, I want to read, you know, The Stand. I'm not at home. I'm not at a bookstore. So I'll just start reading it. But there's something to be said about having that giant, you know, that giant tome that you could almost use as a weapon if you had to. You could throw it at somebody's head, you know. After Under the Dome, another one that he released just a few years later was 11-22-63. And this one is up there for me as one of the greatest King books of all time. This deals with time travel and a guy who basically has to stop the assassination of JFK. But if he does that, he has to leave the love of his life behind. And it's so good, so well done, and not a horror book in the least, but a little supernatural with the time travel, but just one of the best written books I've ever read in my life.
Yeah, and as someone who, you know, I've gone through time periods where I'm like a Kennedy assassination buff, and I'll devour everything I can about the subject and read the books and whatever, and then revisit it a few years later after I haven't read about it, or around the anniversary of the shooting, all the documentaries come on and stuff. So for me, it was like, oh, King's going to write a book in that world around the assassination. Like, what a combination, you know? And I really liked it. I really liked it. The end I thought was great too, because, you know, politically he leans left. And then I believe part of the end was like Hillary Clinton came into power in the country and like just ruined everything. And I was like, well, that's out of character for him to write that. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. And both of those books that we mentioned were both made into miniseries. And Under the Dome, I didn't like it because they strayed away from the book in order to get more seasons out of it. I wish they would just do it faithfully and make it a miniseries of, you know, 6 to 8 episodes and end it. But I never saw 11-22-63. I believe James Franco was in that, so I'm sure that'd probably be worth checking out. Have you ever seen the miniseries for that?
Yep. Yeah. He was the main guy. Yeah. And
any good?
It was pretty close to the book, to be honest with you. The ending was a little different, but it pretty much hit all the main points. It was good. It was better than I expected, actually.
Good. Good. Well, I have to check that out. All right. I guess we're down to number one now, right?
Yeah. I had to go with The Stand. And you mentioned before, and we've discussed it a little bit, but like I said, I wanted to find a couple of things that maybe you didn't know. And did you know that they actually have made a new Stand miniseries?
Really?
Yeah. CBS All Access. It's going to be like the flagship of the CBS, you know, streaming media. And it was supposed to come out in 2020. Who knows what all the scheduling changes that entertainment's going through. But starring James Marsden and Amber Heard. That could be something of a hurdle, too, as controversial as she's been. You never know if that could shelve.
What did she do?
Amber Heard was married to Johnny Depp, and now she's been accused of, like, falsely accusing him of spousal abuse.
Oh, wow. Right.
So I don't know if that's controversial enough to you know, put a stop to it or give it less of a release than it would have gotten.
I'm just looking at it right now. It says, set to premiere on CBS All Access. And looking through the names involved here, Whoopi Goldberg is Mother Abigail, of course. Marilyn Manson is Trash Can Man. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, Alexander Skarsgård is Randall Flagg.
Oh, see, I didn't see that part. That's really good. Yeah,
that's the same guy who played Pennywise.
And to tie it back, as I said, being a big Doors fan, Manson covers the end for the show, which I think even Shooter Jennings did a cover of the end. I'm like, wow, that's going to be interesting. So hopefully it does come out this year. This CBS All Access, one of the draws to it is supposed to be the fact that, you know, it's streaming, so they can use whatever language, violence, whatever. So they don't have to tone down the Stand, as far as I've read. So it should be interesting. I mean, hopefully they nailed it. I didn't see how many parts it's going to be, but you know as well as I do, that's going to take a lot of.
Yeah, if you're going to do it right, you got to do it long. I mean, like you said, I mean, this is not something you can wrap up. Like I said, the 94 miniseries was fun, and I appreciate the fact that they did it, but they had a lot of you know, chains on their hands just because of the material, and then of course the time. They just didn't have enough to do it all. But that had some good characters in it and good casting as well. But I'm excited to see this new one for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
My number one, the original didn't make it on the list, but the sequel did, and that's Dr. Sleep. Once again, another amazing late career King book, which is the sequel to The Shining, based around Danny Torrance growing up. But it's not that. That's, again, it's the tale of two cities where it's Danny Torrance. He's like alcoholic like his father. He still has the shine. But then he has to deal with the True Knot, who are a group of basically life force vampires led by Rose the Hat, who the movie for this was great, too. She was excellent in the book. But it has one of the worst scenes in that book that I've ever read in my life. And that's when they basically skin the 12-year-old kid alive.
Oh, jeez. Well, it's like you said, he's not afraid to sacrifice a child and, you know, character in any of the books. So,
you know, and they said just to show how evil the True Knot is. And I was like, I get it, but it was written with so much detail. And then I took my daughters to that movie, too, and we're just sitting there as this poor kid is screaming. And I'm like, we get the point. Like, enough, end it. But such a great book, a great ending. That's that they go back to the Overlook Hotel to wrap that up. But once again, definitely recommend that to anybody who hasn't read that one. That's a King fan.
Yeah, I remember when I first read the description that it was coming out, and it was like, wow. Like, he doesn't normally do, you know, sequels per se. Like, characters will be referenced, or they'll be, you know, a friend of a character will show up in another book, or someone's relative. So for him to do a sequel, I was like, that's interesting, you know. And it's another one like The Outsider, where I want to read it and I want to see the movie, and I'm kind of like, well, which one am I going to do? And so it's on my list. It's on my list to read.
Absolutely, you'll dig it for sure. It's very, very well done. But, well, dude, what a great chat about the greatest writer of all time, in my opinion. And that's not, like we said, that's not just labeling him as a horror writer, just as a writer across the board.
Yeah, and like, yeah, exactly. He's characterized as horror. I'm sure he's on the horror charts and in the horror section in your bookstore and all that, but the stories have a lot more depth than your typical, you know, scary book or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, well, dude, I appreciate it, and I think we both got some books to read and some miniseries and movies to watch, and we'll come up with another subject and do another show soon.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks, JoJo.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Cheers, brother.